Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by Bo Johnson. How you doing, Bo?
Fantastic. Great to be here.
Great to have you here from snowy Utah. Karen Amador, you're filling in for Tracy today. How you doing, Karen?
I'm great, Pat. Good afternoon.
It's great to have you on mic. Usually you're in studio helping me out. Tracy is with her sister in the hospital. God bless Julie. We're praying for her. Cody is helping his brother at a work function, a really cool event they're doing. So the three of us are filling in. And of course, we've got Matt, our engineer. So Karen, what is our topic today?
It's called Cowardly Lions.
Okay, pretty interesting. So Pat, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, here's the deal. I actually wrote something down today to talk about because I really wanted to get this straight. So I'm going to read a couple things here. Today, we're going to talk about the role of courage in leadership. And that requires some clarity up front here because courage is one of those words that gets thrown around without a lot of specificity. It's too often we think of courage in just the grand public gestures of heroism that are done by soldiers or firefighters or world leaders in the middle of a crisis. And as important as those things are, and as interesting as they are in movies and books, what I want to talk about here today is the day-to-day variety of courage, which I would call interpersonal courage. And I'll be really clear that I think this is actually quite rare in most organizations, even though most leaders would say that they have courage or that they want to have courage. You see, interpersonal courage is the willingness of a leader to pursue the truth in a given situation, even when it's uncomfortable and risky. And so it requires real conviction, a commitment to what is right and good, what is best, which is why people often say leaders have to have the courage of their convictions. If they don't have convictions, they can't have courage. And I've found all too often in organizations of every kind that too many leaders lack conviction, or even if they have it, they choose not to exercise courage in support of those convictions. And they often, far too often, shy away from those moments when hard conversations around the truth and around what is right and true simply have to happen. And they choose instead to take what seems like a safer route. And they justify this often in the name of perfectionism or analysis or prudence. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, it's a matter of fear. And that's what we're going to talk about today is why is interpersonal, you know, micro interpersonal courage so rare in so many organizations that we deal with?
Hmm. Okay, so Pat, I've heard you say in a trusting team, conflict is just the pursuit of truth. But then you said in that statement, I wrote it down, the willingness to pursue truth even when it's risky. So it sounds like a simple question, but what's at risk? What's at risk of doing this interpersonal conflict to pursue truth?
Well, that's a great question, Bo. And it raises another like rhetorical question. What are we afraid of? Mm-hmm. I've had some conversations with leaders recently who are hesitating to do what seemed obviously like the right thing to do, but it seemed kind of risky or uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And the question I ask is, what are we afraid of? Mm-hmm. And I think we have to answer that question because oftentimes the fear is really not very big at all, but mm-hmm. we build it up in our minds and so it's not as risky as we think, but I think one of them is that the relationship won't survive a difficult conversation.
Yeah. It'd be interesting even just right now to do like a kind of gut check around the horn for each of us. What is the fear? Because you say, I think that's really real, Pat, I resonate with that. The fear that mm-hmm. relationships are fragile, that they won't continue. And mm-hmm. maybe we can unpack each of these. Immediately for me, what I thought of is, I'm afraid of hurting people. And we've talked about our different wirings on the podcast, the way that I'm wired and the way that I've hurt people in the past when giving them feedback or entering into conflict, I'm afraid of doing that again. I don't want to hurt them. And maybe even more, I don't want to be seen as somebody who hurts people.
I think that second part is even bigger because we often do hurt people when we don't have difficult conversations. But nobody blames us for that. It's this thing called a sin of omission. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And it's like, yeah, but if you had actually had the right conversation, you'd have saved them a lot of agony. But you go, well, you can't blame me. I just decided not to do it. Whereas if you have the conversation and there's some agony there, then you can more easily be blamed and feel guilty. So I think you made a really important distinction there, Bo, and that is you don't want to be seen as having caused somebody harm, which is different than the potential to cause harm. I think people err on the side of doing nothing far, far, far more often than they do taking action.
Yeah, absolutely, because doing nothing is quite a bit safer, right? You're not stepping off of your couch. You're not speaking up, and so you don't run the risk of being wrong, being stupid, being argued with, possibly wasting time, right? Like you might engage with somebody and really lean in and then they do nothing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, as I ask that question, I'm curious to put you on the spot because we don't get to do this very often. Karen, what's the fear for you if you're hesitant to engage in interpersonal conflict?
The fear for me, probably those conversations tend to get somewhat emotional. And for me, I think finding the right words to say, you know, I think Pat spoke earlier about like having the courage of your convictions. And if there's even a tinge of uncertainty or as it relates to the outcome, even, I think that it tends to get a little scary and I will shy away from a conversation.
I was talking to a guy, Karen, yesterday, a dear friend, a guy I admire a lot. And we were having a conversation about something and, you know, it was kind of unpleasant what we were talking about. Like we were kind of confronting something that was a disappointment in a situation that not about him or me, but about something else. And it was 90% clear that there was a problem. And my friend was like, well, maybe this and maybe that. And he was trying to come up with a reason why the 90% might not be right. And finally I said, you just don't want this to be true, do you? And he goes, I don't want it to be true. And courage is confronting the truth even when it's unpleasant. And granted, if it's 50-50, that's one thing. But man, I see leaders who are like 80% sure the right thing to do is take on an issue, and they will just plumb the depths of that 20% looking for any reason to say, well, maybe we shouldn't do this. And to me, that's really, really dangerous. And I understand it, don't get me wrong, but it's really dangerous.
So what if we double clicked into what you started with, Pat, which is the fear that relationships are fragile, that if we were to engage in conflict with somebody, and Karen, it might be that it's fragile because we didn't have the right words. We weren't, you know, if you're not trained as a lawyer and you don't have exactly the right argument or you're not trained in logic, you feel like I might enter into a conversation and it might be foggy or hazy or unclear at the end. But all that does seem to stem from lack of a healthy, safe, solid relationship. What do you, Pat, what's your response to that if somebody is afraid that it might hurt the relationship?
Well, it's a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? It's like, is it the relationship or is it the conversation? And what's ironic, what makes this a chicken and egg situation is that when you have those conversations, that makes the relationship stronger because you took that risk and you cared enough to pursue the truth with that person and you trusted them. And as a result, you worked through this, even if it's uncomfortable. And then that makes the relationship stronger. So when we choose not to do it to preserve the relationship, all we're doing is preserving a relationship that's bound to become more and more shallow over time. I mean, Bo, I remember you and I had a situation a few months ago. I won't go into the details because it's hard to explain, but something happened and I kind of felt bad about something and you didn't really understand it or know it. And I remember the day I just said, I just got to call Bo and tell him. And you were like, thanks for telling me that. And I said, yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just letting you know this is how it came across. And it was really uncomfortable for about 30 seconds. And then it got so much better. And it means the next time something like that comes up, it's going to be uncomfortable for 20 seconds and then 10. But each time there's a moment where you're like, am I going to actually put the truth out there? Even at the risk that I didn't know how you were going to react, you might have said, hey.
I'm curious in that instance, Bo, were you as uncomfortable as Pat receiving that?
No, I think that I knew immediately that he was feeling bad or uncomfortable bringing it up. And no, I didn't feel nearly as uncomfortable. And when I've been on the other side of that, sometimes it's feels dangerous to enter it because you're not sure how it's going to be resolved. And the resolve of the solution is actually usually pretty simple, but the emotion is clouding our ability to see it. So this is reasonable people can, you know, our friend Tim Cooper says, healthy relationships are not fragile, right? Like, and if we can enter in build a little resiliency in our relationships. They're not that fragile.
Right. But if we treat them like they're fragile, there's a self-fulfilling prophecy there almost.
Mm-hmm.
There is. And I think as you were describing some of that, Pat, I actually think there's another fear related to the fear of, oh, I wonder if when we say we want to protect the relationship, is actually there's a fear underneath that, which is the fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if a relationship isn't maintained, what does that say about me? Right? Like that, and beneath that is sort of this MO that we fall into accidentally, and of whom, you know, I'm the chief person at doing this, is we fall back into the habits of self-preservation. And so when we're not entering into interpersonal conflict, a whole lot of the time it's about us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We make these decisions in the moment that the person receiving it isn't able to receive or be vulnerable in that moment. Receive your message, if that makes sense. So you make that decision to not go there because you think that they can't handle it, when in fact it's more about you typically in that moment.
It's usually about us. We're lacking that courage. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I just want to mention to people, the root of the word courage is heart. Cœur in French or in Latin. And this is not a mind thing, it's a heart thing. Because prudence is like weighing all the factors and looking at all the data and saying, oh, the prudent decision is this. But let me tell you, 80% of the data can tell you to do something. But if it's going to be uncomfortable, people's hearts, their lack of courage, will talk them out of it. I want to tell you a quick story. I worked with an organization, just recently had this experience, with an organization where an employee was treated really poorly by his manager and wasn't supported in a difficult situation. And as a result, he got blamed and really humiliated in front of his peers. Okay, and in front of some customers. And he stood up and said, this doesn't seem right. And went to the CEO found out about it essentially. And went to the guy and said, yeah, I agree that that wasn't fair. But then the CEO didn't go to the chain of command and tell people, you need to make this right and you need to never do this again. The CEO did not want to upset the apple cart. And so while the CEO went directly to the employee and said, hey, I agree with you, time went by and the employee was still treated like a pariah by his peers. And then the CEO, who's part of a division of a larger organization, the people above that CEO didn't push for this. And today I just got a message from that guy, the employee, he quit. And they said, you're the kind of employee we want because you had courage and you did the right thing. And he said, yeah, but I got punished for it by my boss and my peers. Mm-hmm. They said, yeah, well, that's hard. You got to hang in there. Instead of going in and actively supporting them. And I tried my hardest to attribute this to anything other than cowardice. But there was no explanation. Mm-hmm. And the person left and said, I can't work in an organization and try to have courage if the people that I'm working for who support me don't have the courage to speak up for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was that bad.
Mm. Yeah, that's heart-wrenching. And I think it's common. I'd love to hear you speak to that a little bit, Pat. There's several dynamics here. One is if you are the leader and you're trying to be courageous with the folks around you. But let's start with the inverse of what if you're on a team or part of an organization where the leader doesn't really tolerate courage? Talk about that.
Well, I love the way you asked that because it's not about them just even having it. If you don't have courage, you really can't reward and tolerate the people around you having courage because ultimately it's going to come back to you and you're probably going to want to cave. And I actually think, Bo and Karen and Matt and all of our listeners, I actually think that a CEO should ask themselves, and this is true, a principal, a pastor, a department head, whatever kind of leader, if they know that they don't have courage, it would be better for them to tell their team, you guys, listen, I hate uncomfortable, risky situations. I don't like to stand in the fray. And so I want you guys to know that because it would probably be best if you guys didn't either, because I'm probably not going to be able to support you. And at least people would know what they were dealing with. Mm-hmm. But of course, that even saying that would require courage.
Exactly.
And so, mm-hmm. so that would be right. a limiting factor. The problem is, and we call this cowardly lions because there's all these people out there that say, courage, 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 courage. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, are you going to go confront that situation? And they're like, oh, no, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's easy to praise and celebrate, like you alluded to before, the big moments of courage of Churchill standing up to Hitler, or in the Civil War, I think it's called Pickett's Charge there on Gettysburg. Really wish I'd looked that up before now. But these big moments of somebody saying, we're going to sell the company, we're going to merge with the other company. But those things start with micro moments of courage. The ability for Churchill to be able to face his own inner circle, right?
Exactly. I was just, as you were talking about that, I'm saying, and I got to visit the headquarters in London, the museum, the World War II museum, where you go down in the bunker, essentially, and underneath the street where they lived, and you see the room where they sat in. And you know that if he was going to stand up to Hitler, he had to be able to stand up to a general who was doing something to undermine things, or he had to stand up to somebody he was working with. And you're exactly right. It's those small moments of courage that really give us the permission to do it in a bigger scale. But sometimes mm-hmm. I feel like people want to project courage without actually exercising it in smaller ways.
So, Pat, how do you foster courage on a team, on a leadership team, for example?
Well, you have to actually possess it yourself. I mean, if the leader, so let's say the leader has courage. It is interesting. If a leader has courage, I don't think he or she can tolerate an ongoing, if you have people that work for you and with you that don't have courage, I think ultimately you have to either require that of them and encourage it and foster that in them, or you have to let them go. Because I'm really kind of coming to the conclusion that there are two kinds of organizations. There's those that are courageous, interpersonally and otherwise, and those that are not. And I think that if you don't share the same courage profile generally as the organization, you're not long for that place. I've seen this so often in so many different kinds of organizations. It's a weird thing. It'd be kind of neat if on a company's website it said, we're a courageous organization. Or we're not a courageous organization, so you'd know how to behave when you were there and what to expect from leaders. I don't think I answered. So let's just say you're a leader, and then what do you say to people? You say, hey, doing what's right and speaking up for truth with good intentions, even if it gets messy, even if there's something that happens that's difficult, I will support you in that because your intentions were pure and you were speaking for truth. Whereas if you punish it, you can never ask for it again.
Well, I've got to believe there's some kind of exposure therapy there, Pat. I mean, you can practice that on the team, right? Just having healthy conflict, for example, which is what we promote in the five dysfunctions of a team.
Right. And some people might be listening to this saying, what's the difference between this and conflict? Well, having a conversation about something requires conflict, and there's some courage in that too. But it's something more when you have to stand up and say, I don't think this is true. Or I don't think this is right. And I'm going to stand here and pull the chain and say, this needs to be discussed because I am feeling uncomfortable with this.
Wow. You know, I think that we talked a little bit and we were prepping for this about that courage is not necessarily like the test that you stick in a pool and it pulls up and you can see it immediately if there's enough chlorine in there or not. Right. Like if somebody says, pulls that chain and says, we're going to do this hard thing, you don't necessarily know within a split second who has courage and who doesn't. Because some people need to process that. And I actually wonder, Pat, what you think about this idea that the leader can have a fullness of empathy and resolve. That they can say both that they can have all empathy and all resolve. They don't have to pick one or the other, but they could say, you know what? It is going to cost us something. It is going to be hard. It is challenging for us to do the right thing. I understand that that might cost you something, and it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. What do you think about that? Yeah, and Karen, I want to go back to you've convinced me of something, Bo. Karen, I want to go back to your question. I think that what the leader has to do is demonstrate it again and again and again. And what happens is the people that work for him or her are going to realize, oh my gosh, I need to emulate them, or they're going to realize I can't emulate them and I don't want to. And it's probably time for me to not be here.
Mm-hmm.
More than any program or intervention, I think the leader just has to do that. But you doing it with empathy and letting people know, yeah, this is scary, and I'm going to choose courage over fear.
Or courage over comfort, even.
Yes. Yeah. That's something we talked about when we were prepping for this, Bo, about that discomfort, it lies kind of at the heart of this, right?
Like it's an addiction to comfort almost.
Right.
Yeah, I've said this before that I want, and I have not done it, I almost want to have a sign in my home office right here that says something like, my life is bigger than protecting my comfort, or my life is bigger than protecting the status quo, because that's kind of what we can walk into in these moments of, oh, I don't know if I want to be disruptive. I don't want to rock the boat. And we need to keep in front of us our mission, our personal life missions, hopefully, are bigger than keep the peace, keep the artificial peace, keep people happy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't planning to say this, but last night I was on the elliptical machine and I was getting ready to watch the football game. And then at halftime, when I got home from work, it was 38-7. So I decided, well, I'm not going to do that. So I went on YouTube and I was just looking for inspiring videos. And this guy, Jordan Peterson, had a video and he was speaking in Europe to a group of people, like in the, I think it was in Ephesus, about life and about courage and about the moments of truth. And he just talked about comfort is never the thing. It's about courage and adventure and making those right decisions to speak out and to do the right thing. And that at the end of our life, it's not going to be the comforts that we have, but it's going to be the courage we displayed, even if we lose our comfort as a result. And I just thought it was really, I didn't know the context of it all, but I thought it really moved me. And he was like practically in tears talking to these young people about courage matters and life is an adventure. It's not about guaranteeing your comfort. And I remember thinking, man, I wish every human being could understand that.
Yeah. And I mean, courage, if you think about it, leads to growth, right? So when you're looking back at those moments in time where you actually had the courage and growth came from that, you're so grateful to have gone through that, even though it was probably hard in the moment.
That is such a great connection. A friend of mine who runs these ultra marathons, the last marathon he did was 240 miles, and he got really upset that he was injured on mile 80. Anyway, he's potentially not doing very well. Anyway, he said growth is the combination of stress and rest. And stress is sort of maybe not quite the right word, but there is something, Karen, of like, yeah, we grow when we stretch. Do hard things, when we stretch, exactly, when we push ourselves past what would normally be comfortable.
Yeah, and I think in society, there's times that society demands that people stretch because it's forced upon them. And war is a horrible thing, and I wish every war in the world would end. And you know, obviously nobody likes war, but when we think about our grandparents and their parents, our great grandparents, that went through world wars and all these horrible things, they didn't even have a choice whether to stretch or not. They just had to. And I do think that the profile for stretching is probably a little lower. So we have to kind of choose it ourselves. We can't wait for it to be hoisted upon us.
I'm sitting here thinking about what I've observed gets in the way of this interpersonal courage. And one of those things is, which we've talked about before in this podcast, is sort of the tyranny of consensus, which is the idea that we're just going to come up with the common denominator and we'll just end up going in that direction. And you're welcome to comment on that. The other one that I'm thinking about is, I think sometimes we can actually cause more harm than good when we dance around the truth instead of just jabbing it, right? If we have something that's on our mind, we think that something might not be right, or we want to be able to stand up for something, and we give little nudges or suggestions, does that make sense? Like we're almost like trying to dance, hoping to lead our dance partner there instead of just standing up and saying it. Because I think that, tell me what you think about that, how that dance might cause accidental harm.
Well, it's interesting because that's a very interesting comment. If I'm in a conversation and I'm being patronized, it actually makes me feel far, far worse than if somebody confronts me directly. If they're dancing around it and hinting at it, because then I'm going, oh, wow, they disagree with me and they don't think I can take it. And they're kind of, now I feel doubly bad. Whereas if somebody just says, think you're making the wrong decision there, don't think you're seeing this right, I don't think that's the truth, then I can just deal with that. And we do talk about this concept of entering the danger, entering the danger. And that is, and we got that from improv theater, which is, and this is just humor. The best improv comes about when somebody in improv says something ridiculous and even potentially kind of like funny in a scandalous way. And the next person doesn't avoid it, but goes right to it. And that's not really, there's no real risk there, but people even doing improvisational comedy find that to be dangerous. Well, when that comment is one that actually could provoke people to be uncomfortable emotionally, it's not that big a surprise that many leaders will back off, which is why courage, I think as I'm thinking about this whole thing, you guys, I'm thinking courage is rare and it's more important as a result of that than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really do believe it's about us and not the person that we're talking, that's in front of us.
Yep.
Goes back to that. Yeah.
I agree.
Self-preservation, self-preservation of ego, of status, all sorts of things.
Status is mine. The idea that I could lose a seat at the table or the respect of the people there, or that they could think less of me as a result of disagreeing or pushing them out of their comfort zone. That is probably my biggest fear. And I think everybody throughout history who's had courage had to put their status on the table and say, you guys might push me away, but I got to do what's right.
And it's really the decision for whether it's the person we're confronting or a status on the team, the willingness to say, I care more about you than your view of me. I care more about us doing the right thing than I care about me having a seat at the table.
You know, that's so great because courage is rooted in the heart and love. And to enter the danger and take a courageous stand is really out of love for the other. And when we love ourselves, we lose that heart and we decide not to. That's a fascinating.
And one last thing, I think, I mean, you risk offending people if you imply that they can't handle the truth. Because people pick up on that.
I feel
that way. I mean, you said earlier about feeling patronized and those kinds of things, Pat, and it's so true. And you really do sense that when the message is kind of couched in awkward and careful ways sometimes, you know?
Yeah. If somebody says to you, hey, there was a difficult situation in the office and I just pretty much avoided it and helped us avoid a difficult conversation. The reaction from our spouse should be, ooh, you probably really hurt somebody with that, huh? As opposed to doing them a favor, you probably left them feeling untrusted and unworthy of the truth. Interesting. Hey, Matt, we have a follow-up unpaid advertisement today, don't we?
Yes. So I think it was in late November when we did an unpaid ad for Fresh Clean Threads. I had ordered everything and I was talking about the Try podcast and how all you need to do is try. And I got an email from them, like an order confirmation that I thought was a good example of that. But that was before I received everything. So I wanted to give an update on the actual product itself. And it's great. I got a couple shirts and a couple pairs of socks and everything fits well. I wore it yesterday. I got a compliment. So
I'm going to go get every penny. T-shirts. All right. Bo, you're wearing a Fresh Clean Thread right now.
I am. Didn't even know you were going to bring this up. Bo is wearing the medium, everybody, right here.
All right. Very good. So we're not getting paid for that. We wouldn't talk about it. They tried, made a difference to Matt. The product actually met with that too. So Fresh Clean Threads, way to go. Okay. Thanks for joining us here on our Cowardly Lions podcast on At the Table. We love being able to talk to you and we will look forward to our next one. And we'll probably have Cody and Tracy back. And Bo, Karen, thanks for filling in and for being here. We'll talk to everybody next time and At the Table. God bless.